Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
We are here with our next guest, Tina Stromstedt. Tina, hi.
Hi. Hi, Sal. Good to talk with you.
Nice to talk with you again, too. Tina is the owner at Soul's Body in San Francisco, California. And Tina, could you tell us your website address, please?
Sure. It's my name, so it's a bit easier to remember. It's TinaStromstedt.com.
Very good. And any other ways folks could contact you, Tina, through perhaps social media, your phone, email?
I do have a Facebook page that I think it's just Tina Stromstedt, PhD, and they could look me up on Facebook. That would be fine. Email is tstromstedt@aol.com, or my phone is 415-668-7857.
Excellent. And Tina, we've spoken many times, but for the benefit of those folks that are not familiar with you or your work at Soul's Body Center, would you please just give an overview of what you do, how you do it?
Sure. I'm a Jungian psychoanalyst. I'll come back to these maybe. A licensed psychotherapist, a registered dance movement therapist, and a somatics educator. So what that means is that part of the time I see clients in my office, and part of the time I train therapists and I teach at conferences and in other settings, including in different countries with people from different cultures. And primarily, my interest is in helping people with a lot of the issues that we can all have in the course of a lifetime, whether it's life transitions, struggles in relationships, having a fuller sense of oneself and a life more meaningfully lived, something that feels more satisfying, sometimes working with trauma, whether it's from early development or something more current, one's vocation, if you're really doing what you were born to do, and how people know about that, how they can find out about that, kind of from the inside out. The Jungian part of me, Carl Jung was a Swiss psychiatrist who lived from 1875 to 1961, and he worked very deeply with the unconscious through dreams, through active imagination, which I thought I might talk a bit more about today. And he was very interested in what the deeper unconscious, let's say the roots of one's issues, had to contribute to the healing journey, not only softening or trying to cure symptoms. Symptoms, as we call them, another way to think about that is that they're also messages from the interior that are telling us when something is out of balance or something isn't working well, whether it's physiological to do with health or more emotional and psychological, which also hits our health and impacts our health, as we know. So he wanted to do whatever he could do to help people get to the roots of their issues so that they could learn more about themselves, come to know themselves better, rather than just getting fixed, so to speak, you know, with more of a sense of a quick fix. Of course, there are issues that, you know, can be resolved fairly briefly, so, you know, a stuck place or a big decision or a life passage that people need some support and guidance in moving through. But there are other things that have to do with our patterns in relationship or our sense of self or self-esteem or lack of it or our capacity for intimacy, things like this that go back usually into our earlier experiences. And those tend to take more time, and they can get a lot of help both from what we're dreaming and from what the body is holding, because the body is holding our whole history. The body remembers cellularly, you know, and the body is the home of feeling. And so it's to this that we can turn to also get more information or guidance or more contact with what it is that's going on, and not only through talking, because talking is often what we know already and the kind of stories we tend to tell ourselves about who we are or what other people have told us about who they think we are. But Jung was very interested in what he called individuation, meaning the process of living the life you were meant to live, of becoming more of your authentic self, integrating things that you know less about yourself that are also part of you, and becoming more whole. So,
Tina, you mentioned living the life you were meant to live. And how does it fit in then? Because you also mentioned earlier doing what you were meant to do.
Yeah.
When does that come to people? I mean, I know people that said from the time that they were young, teenagers, I want to do this, and they did it. And then other people say, gee, I don't know, I don't know. And they just kind of bounce from one thing to another.
Yes.
What's the dividing line? Well, why does it happen for some and not for others?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I think in some ways, some people do have more of a sense of where their excitement, what they really value, what they really love, you know, where that comes from very early on, what that is, what they tend to move toward. It's also very much reinforced by the people we grow up with. So if you love music and your parents recognize that and they give you music lessons and they have music playing in the house and they don't tell you to turn it off, you know, unless it's too loud and then you can turn it down.
Right.
But they support that budding interest that they can see and they can feel your excitement. Or maybe it's dance, or maybe it's art, or maybe it's tinkering with things. You know, I've had people in my office, and you probably know people too, who, when they were young, took the radio apart and put it back together, or took the clock apart and put it back together, or took the car apart. So whatever it is for a person, sometimes they know, sometimes it's a little bit genetic. You know, there may be other musicians or writers in the family, or just that they grew up around people who were doing something like that, who were excited about it. But you can also have a different situation where you have someone with a different inclination, let's say, who grows up in a family of musicians. I'm just saying that because I heard some great music last night. And they say, well, that's not really my thing. My thing is focusing quietly and writing, or drawing, or designing buildings. And my parents didn't really get that. Or I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And my parents were nice enough people, but they weren't really curious about my interests. And they didn't necessarily send me to summer camp where I could try out a lot of different things. Or get me a mentor, you know, if I was showing promise in something, but I needed a little boost, a little help. Or if there's a lot of trauma in the household, that can throw a child really off their game.
Yeah.
They're just busy trying to stay safe, you know,
yeah.
Or trying to see how to connect to people and to drop into their heart and their belly and say, wow, what I really love. They're not ready for that yet. They need enough safety to be able to do that. And so maybe at school there's a teacher who really sees them and says, maybe you'd like to read this book.
Yeah.
You know,
or maybe what is you're exposed to and it's not in school. I know someone who, as a youngster, read about sports all the time, magazines, newspapers, all of that, and did not get into sports. But I think the exposure to the written word helped to create the ability to see how to communicate, and that communication skill turned into writing skill and later speaking skill.
Yes, beautiful. So there's a natural evolution because that person followed his interest, his inclination.
And it wasn't to be, communicating. It was to read about baseball, football.
That's what was exciting then.
Yeah, right.
And it evolved in a natural way. So that is part of what we mean by individuation. Becoming more whole over time. It's like an unfolding. It's sort of like a flower unfolding. It's a bud. You know, it's kind of or a seed, and then if you plant the seed in the ground and there are enough minerals, enough resources in the family or in the community, and then you give it enough water, and then you don't dig it up before it started to, you know, before the little shoot has started to come out to say, well, is it growing fast enough? What's going on? You know, you trust it, you nurture it, there's enough sunlight, warmth in the family, or, you know, even if it's just one other person who sees you, and at a certain point, the seed begins to blossom, and then it begins to find its own way. Oh, this is what I'm drawn to. Oh, this is the next step. So some people say, I never really knew what I wanted to be, but I just followed my heart, or I took one step at a time, and I made decisions at the crossroads about, if you think about it, what gives you energy to think about, and what drains your energy?
Yeah, and if you could say, I did, or I'm doing what I always like to do,
yeah,
that's really the shortcut to explaining it.
It's so true.
Now, let me ask you a question here, because I know you wanted to talk about active imagination. I'm not really sure what active imagination is, or even fits into what we've been discussing so far.
Well, it does, in the sense that, so Jung coined that term. It didn't start with him. It goes back to the beginning of time. And I think children are very involved in their creative imagination if they're left to their own devices and they feel safe and they can play. So he distinguished between what he called a passive attitude toward the imagination and a more active attitude. So a passive attitude toward the imagination would be that you can get lost in fantasy. So you might spend a lot of time thinking about certain things or daydreaming, but you may never really take it up. You might kind of live in a pretend world and say, you know, what's happening around me is kind of uncomfortable. I'm just going to kind of go to a place where I feel safer. But you may never really do anything to move toward helping that creative imagination become more of a reality in your life. So it can be more compulsive, like a pattern, a kind of an escape from painful feelings. So if you're in an undesirable situation, you can kind of dissociate or just go off in your mind and disappear for a while. I don't mean that you're doing something really creative, but you're kind of stuck in, if only I was thinner, you know, and you have a lot of pictures in your mind of how you should look, or you have, if only I was with this man or with this woman, and you kind of go off and you spend a lot of time with this made-up person, or it might be a person you even know, but it's not really part of your life, but it's easier or safer than trying to engage with the person you're actually with or how you actually feel in your body and what's happening, you know, if it's related to weight and maybe what some of the issues are, or maybe you're fine the way you are, but you just don't look like a magazine cover, which is, you know, there are a lot of issues that can come up around the body which come more from the culture than they do from a person's native experience. So active imagination is different. So an example of that is when you turn your attention toward the unconscious. And he said there are four steps to this. So first you might find a way to relax. You're lying on the floor and letting yourself breathe, drop into your belly and your breath. Or you're sitting comfortably in a chair. And you let yourself get interested in what's happening in the present moment. Some people now are calling it mindfulness. You bring your attention to what's happening in your body, in your sensations, in your emotions, maybe in things that you're imagining. And then you allow yourself, if we're doing it in movement, which we call authentic movement, which we've talked about a bit before, to follow those movement impulses or to be present to the emotion that might be there, the sadness or the sweetness or the irritation or the excitement, curiosity. And you give it form. The movement just starts to open up. Or maybe you let yourself draw what you experienced in your body or in your imagination, not having to paint a beautiful picture, but just putting on paper in color and line what you felt, what you experienced, without the critic, but with curiosity. And then you sit back. So step number one, opening to the unconscious, letting yourself relax enough to let it bubble up. Step two, giving it form in movement or painting or drawing or writing or any number of things. We can come back to that. Step three, reflecting on the form. So let's say it's drawing. You sit back and you look at the drawing and you say, wow, there's a lot of red and black in there. I'm having some strong feelings. I wonder what that's about. And then you can write about it, or you can talk to the therapist, the person that is there with you. And then the fourth step is kind of the hardest, and that is living what you've learned. Jung went so far as to say, once we've learned something from the unconscious, we have an ethical obligation to live it, to do the best we can to integrate it into our life somehow, even if it's just a little bit every day. Not to be hard on ourselves for not making it all happen, but just living it kind of step by step. So I'll pause in a moment, but briefly, free writing or automatic writing, just putting your hand down on the page and not stopping and just letting yourself write without an editor, that's active imagination. Or just drawing without knowing ahead of time what you're going to draw and trusting what comes out. Or sand play therapy, where there are little figures in the therapist's room and you take them down. You just see what chooses you instinctually. You take them down and you put them in the sandbox, and then you reflect on the story that's unfolding there. So those are some examples of it, and it's a way to let the unconscious speak to your ego, to your conscious mind, with enrichment about where you are in the moment, what's unfolding in your deeper self,
so,
and that,
Tina,
can help guide your life.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is you're getting in touch with yourself, you're relaxing, and then through either words or as a proxy with words, you're saying movement or sand play or the arts, you're expressing yourself, and then those lessons, the hard part, is putting them into action in your life. First of all, am I right or am I?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
So what we're going to do is we're going to take a break and then come back and talk a little bit more about this, about why it may be so difficult to actually put this into day-to-day effect. And we'll be back with that right after this.
Every business needs professionals they can trust. Let it be your lawyer, accountant, electrician. Even the company plumber are all people you can trust. So why are you settling for your printer vendor? They never respond to your questions, and when they do, it's always late. Always seems to take an eternity to get your printing done and ready, but you've dealt with it because there really wasn't another alternative. That is, until now, Max Image Printers. Take the worry out of your printing needs. As a hybrid company, both on website and phone, they welcome clients, businesses of all sizes, to call and ask questions to make as many orders as you need, with the confidence of having your work printed, beautiful, and ready in just a few business days. Bring the trust back into your printing. Maximize your printing experience with Maxim Image Printing. Call now at 801-977-8330. Email Keith at maximage.net. Visit the website, maximage.net. Max Image Printing. Quality service. Guaranteed. If you're not happy, you don't pay.
On a Cape Cod shore, 16 striped bass fish and a horseshoe crab were found dead, killed by a harmful algal bloom. The town blamed excessive lawn fertilizer for polluting the water. They restricted lawn fertilizing to once a year. The state overruled, mandating five times a year. Though the striped bass died on a Falmouth shore, fertilizer pollution is a national problem, clogging our waterways. If you believe in our rights to clean water and beaches, if you want to stop the killing of fish by excessive fertilizer, please join with us. Make a donation for responsible stewardship. Acting together, we can have clean beaches and more fish. Please visit www.donateforoceans.org. That is www.donate4oceans.org.
Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
Back with Tina Stromstad, owner at Souls Body Center in San Francisco, California. Today she's talking about using your active imagination, getting comfortable, getting in touch with yourself, and expressing some thoughts that you're having, either through movement, through words, through some kind of artistic thing, and then looking and seeing what you've expressed. It could be a painting with some bold colors, and then acting on it. And Tina was saying that's the hard part, or at least I think she was quoting Jung as saying that's the hard part. So why is it so hard to do it?
Well, the simplest way to say it is that it's been in the unconscious, meaning it's been out of our conscious awareness. We don't know a lot about it yet. So we have to be curious about it to begin with, not try to repress it again, because it's been kind of pushed down for reasons. So we want to welcome it and find safe contexts where we can begin to practice those behaviors. So let's say those bold strokes, red and black, in the drawing. I mean, I was working with a woman the other day who had some of that going on, and she said, wow, that's kind of strong. And she'd never really been allowed to express herself with assertion or strength. She learned to accommodate other people's needs. You know, she was a good mother. Her kids were grown up, and she didn't know who she was without taking care of other people. And her husband was actually quite lovely, and he said, well, what do you want to do? I'll support you. But she didn't really know enough about herself at this new stage of life to say, this is what I want to do. So she was able to step back from the drawing, and I said, how about if you move that bright red line that goes all the way across the page? Where do you feel that in your body? And she said, it's right in my gut. And I said, okay, let's feel into what's in your gut. You know, find your feet on the ground, get your standpoint, some good support for feeling that, and see if you can let your breath drop in there. And just look at that red line and shoo, follow it and see what wants to happen. And at first she was going, really? Can I really do that? And I just stayed present with her, and I said, well, let's find out. And so she began to, you know, make a movement with her arm, to extend her arm out into space, taking up more space than she was used to. I'm not supposed to take up space. So she was already working with a taboo. She was bumping up against it right then and there. But she continued with her arm. And then she started to let more of her body begin to support the arm and move and expand. And then I said, might it be possible to drop a sound onto your exhale? What might that red streak across the page sound like? And then she started being able to breathe more deeply and, ah, or yeah, you know, or no, or she experimented. I said, let's experiment with yes and see what you might want to say yes to. Let's experiment with no and see what you might want to say no to. Can I really do that? Why not? Nobody's here. Just you and me, and we can practice. So she got better at that. And then the next step was, what is one thing you might want or need to say no to in your life right now? And conversely, what is one thing you might want to say yes to in your life right now? And one of the no's was, you know, signing up for more responsibilities on a particular committee that she'd been part of for a really long time that wasn't fulfilling for her anymore. And so actually in the next week, she came in and she said, Tina, I let them know that I couldn't do that anymore, that I was happy for what I had done with the group, but now I needed more time for something else that was trying to come, be born in me.
Right, right. Tina, I'm so sorry that we are running short on time here, and I know that you like to end the sessions with a particular quote, so can we move on to that?
Sure. Here's one from Martha Graham, wonderful modern dancer. She says, there is a vitality, a life force, an energy, a quickening that is translated through you into action. And because there is only one you in all time, this expression is unique. And if you block it, it will never exist through any other medium. The world will not have it. It is not your business to determine how good it is, nor how valuable, nor how it compares with other expressions. It is your business to keep it yours clearly and directly, to keep the channel open.
And let that uniqueness come out.
That's right.
Tina Stromstead, owner at Souls Body Center, San Francisco, California. Tina, always a pleasure speaking with you. I look forward to getting the chance to speak with you again next time. If you could just remind us one more time of that website and social media sites.
Sure. It's TinaStromstead.com. And I think my social media site, is Tina Stromstead, PhD.
Thank you very much, Tina. We'll speak with you again next time.
Thanks so much, Sal. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, take care. And we'll have more coming up.
Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
So you see, son, good manners are very, very important. Someday, many years from now, when you're a grown-up, you'll be a man. And when you are, you should be a gentleman. Do you want me to go through it one more time?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Exactly. Always say please, thank you, you're welcome, and excuse me. Sit up straight, hold doors open for ladies. If a door's shut, then knock first. Don't burp, don't swear, don't speak with your mouth full, don't reach across people's plates, keep your elbows off the table.
What table?
And don't interrupt. While we're at it, don't stare, don't use foul language, don't call people names, but do remember people's names. Always share your toys, play nice, and cover your mouth when you cough or sneeze. On the bus, give up your seat to anyone who has trouble standing. Bottom line, treat others the way you'd like to be treated. Got it?
Got it.
And stop picking your nose.
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. But spending just 2 minutes twice a day making sure they brush their teeth is easier and could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. That's 2min2x.org. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.